This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, welcome one and all to another edition of Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. My name is Tim Nicholson, here with you for the next 55 or so minutes. And a big thanks to Luke and the gang for Critical Hit, who will be back, of course, next week at the same damn time. So make sure you are listening as well. We are rugging up here in the studio, and I have the warmth of a couple of men here. We're also rugged up. And that's as creepy as I'm going at this early stage of the game. Mike Costello, hello.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm all right. A little bit flustered, but yeah. I'm all right.
A little bit flustered.
Got some little technical things that I'm learning every week here at Joy 94.9. But, you know, that's the fun of it. Byron Matthew Darkus is also with us. Hello.
I'm sorry. It's Maureen Glory.
Oh, Maureen Glory is back.
Yes, Maureen Glory is back. That's right.
Hello, Maureen. Now, can I just say you're looking rather lumberjack-esque today. You're a little bit unshaven. You've got a bit of a flanny happening.
Yeah. Well, but I'm a lumberjack, and that's okay.
It is okay, yep. I believe.
I work all day, and I sleep at night. No. Yes. Yes, I'm sure. It's too cold to be out there without some sort of flannel, I think.
There's a lot of talk about the weather, isn't there, guys? It's all happening.
Yep, but we're going to spend the next hour talking about the weather.
Well, I tell you what, though, it is a good reminder for people to stay safe on the roads, because when I drove away just moments ago to come here, there was some wheel spin and, you know, there was lots of things happening on the road. So you've just got to be careful, guys. It's slippery out there.
Oh, it's
just
a great,
take care.
It's a great time to maybe check those tyre pressures as well as, you know, the tyre depth. And, you know, if they're a bit lacking, just invest in a new set of tyres. That's what I say.
Get off your pop.
That's what Maureen Glory says.
Yeah, well, she's got a lot to say. That's the thing.
Yep.
Boys, we've had a big week. We've got a lot to get through today. We're going to drive the fabulous Skoda Fabia, which you guys have experienced overseas, and I've just had a drive of the Australian spec version. So we're going to have a look at that later. We're also going to look also going to look at model sharing and whether anyone actually gives a flying duck.
Oh dear! I know you're talking about sharing cars in car parks. Or are you talking about sharing platforms? And
I'm just talking about sharing platforms. Exactly right. That's okay. Another show, though.
Oh, okay. Car sharing and cottaging and all that sort of stuff there can happen in cars and car parks.
Or just share a car.
Yeah, I believe. Oh.
Yes. And a lot more coming up. But we're going to get right into it and get to the serious stuff that's happening in the world of motoring this week. It never really stops, of course. Now, we found out this week that we knew this was coming, but Hyundai are going down the hot hatch track, ladies and gentlemen. Finally.
Well, you know, I think Hyundai feels that it's still lacking that 1% edge that it needs to be, you know, considered.
You laughed because you say
1%.
Maybe 10%.
Well, maybe. But they've kind of got... Hyundai has some sort of hot cars at the moment. They've got the Turbo Veloster and they've got a version of the i30 in Europe with a turbo engine, but they're not really Golf R hot. They're not really Audi S3 hot, are they? They're sort of halfway in between. And I'm guessing that this car... I haven't seen a whole lot about this car, but I'm guessing that this car is their answer to that.
Well, the rumour is, a lot of people have been reporting, I think, about 170 kilowatts or even less than that, but then there's talk of it actually having more than 200 kilowatts. So
is that the rumour, Willis? Is it?
I hope not. Hope not. But, I mean, yeah, they desperately need something to kind of sex up their lineup. And they've got the Veloster, and that's cute, but...
Ugh.
Well, yeah, not so much cute.
I don't like that. Yeah, the word out is we don't even know if Hyundai are going to replace the Veloster.
Well, that's true.
Although then there's talk that they're going to replace something with they're going to replace it with something maybe a lot harder and rawer and sexier. So who knows? Maybe that's what the N points to. Does anyone know what N stands for?
Yes, it's Namyang, which is their development center in South Korea somewhere. But it also, I think they're tying it in with Nürburgring as well, because they've now got a development center at the Nürburgring in
And they
Germany.
Make a big song and dance about this. And Hyundai has a World Rally Championship entrant.
True.
It's got a growing presence in other motorsports. Yeah. It's doing all its testing in Europe now. A lot of its design in Europe. It is really odd that it doesn't have a proper hot hatch already. Mm. And the fact that it's coming is no surprise. But... Yep. can't get here soon enough.
No, that's true. That's true. Bring it on, Hyundai.
Yeah,
bring
yeah.
it on quickly.
And maybe change the name, though. N, it just isn't that evocative, I think.
It's not. No. It's not. Like, you're quite right. There's no way to get around that. Yeah. It's a little bit Dullesville. But yep. I think we're stuck with that. Yep. So that's all we can do. Also reports this week, guys, that, you know, that we've been talking a little bit about the Alfa Romeo Giulia that, you know, they think is going to resurrect the brand. Sexy mid-sizer with a Ferrari-developed engine. Apparently that thing was developed in only 2.5 years. Now, boys, what does that say?
It is not very long in car terms. You know, I mean, BMW, for instance, with its new X1, the process with designing that and getting that together was more than 4 years. And that's just a fairly niche car for that brand. This is the car that Alfa is pegging the future of its entire brand on. This is the renaissance point of the brand that's been in the doldrums, and this is where it all starts again. So to only give it 2.5 years is going to suggest one of two things for me. One, they've had this amazing run. They've just ticked every box incredibly well. It's all gone as smooth a sailing as it can possibly go. Or they've cut a bunch of corners and half-assed it. And I don't know which, because I haven't driven it. In fact, hardly anybody has driven it yet outside of the brand. So it's a bit tough to know. But 2.5 years, not a long time.
Oh, look, I reckon you're being a bit rough there. I mean, the Italians, the Romans, they invented, you know, they invented the sewage system and all those engineering things. And I think they could probably get it over and done with in 2.5 years. I think that when the Italians put their, they put their minds to it, they can really get great things achieved. And I think, 2.5 doesn't sound like much, but if you read deeper, if you dig deeper, you'll see that they had a special Skunk Works team work on this, and they spent 2.5 years solely working on this project. And there was a bunch of people, ex-Ferrari people included and Maserati people, and they literally worked day and night, and they were given a 26-month deadline from that April 29, 2013 start date until the, I think it was the 23rd of June 2015 unveiling date. They were given that timetable and they said, just stick to it. Now, the car isn't complete, as you know. It's not going to go on sale until the middle of next year in Europe and North America. So there is going to be more development going on with this car. And in fact, the final shakedown, they've even said the final shakedown hasn't happened. So by the time that's over, more or less 3.5 years. So that kind of makes it a little bit more in line with what the Germans do.
They certainly cut corners in design, because they just copied about four other brands and mushed it together to make some sort of Franken car.
Yeah, one of them being Kia Optima.
It very much borrows from a suite of cars that are already out and about. It's an extremely disappointing car. I was really disappointed when I saw it. It has a Ferrari engine. Great, big whoop. It looks bland. And for the 3 Series Alfa, that's going to rebuild the brand. It might be an amazing car, but an Italian car needs to be evocative in the styling department. And for me, it just doesn't do it.
No, and I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I think you were also a little bit disappointed on the styling front, Byron, and I was too. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it in regular spec. So we're obviously seeing a really sporty, sexy version. I think once we see that kind of regular spec, that'll give us more of an idea about the car. But the other reason that potentially for them to have such a short time is that Fiat Chrysler has obviously been a bit all over the shop in the last 10 years, you know, with mergers and financial crises and all that kind of thing. They probably didn't know this thing was going to happen until a couple of years ago,
You're absolutely right. And in fact, I should have mentioned also that they were very quite a ways down the track of developing a front drive successor to the 159, and that car was completely canned in April 2013. So they made the decision to go rear drive, and this decision came from the top, and they got all these Ferrari and Maserati people, as I said. But one of the most tantalising tidbits that came out of this car yesterday is that the suspension tuning has been done by the same guy that's done the 488 Ferrari. Oh. So that, to me, speaks of maybe something that will probably blow away some of the duller competitors in that kind of compact/medium sedan, luxury sedan segment, simply because it will be a driver-focused car. And at the end of the day, that's what's important to an Alfa Romeo. Now, I've owned a couple of Alfa Romeos, and I grew up, I'm half Italian, so I've grown up with Alfas. And have you guys You had any alphas in your life?
I had some alfalfa sprouts in the 90s.
Oh, okay. Is that what that smell is? I often smell some alfalfa from you.
I don't think there was an Alfa Romeo within, you know, I grew up in a small country town. I don't think Alfa Romeos were even on the radar in that part of the world. I don't think there's any out in that way. I don't think I ever had much exposure to the brand as a kid, which is where your opinions of cars are formed. So I never really was one of the Alfa aficionados. Not to say that it's not a worthy thing, but it never really grabbed me as a brand.
Oh, yeah, I was ensconced in the passion and the rust, I think, from an early age. And I think I even may have had some of my early experimental phases in Alfa Romeos, but that's for the midnight session.
Yeah, that's for a later time,
that's
I think.
That's right, yep.
Now, very briefly, sticking with this gigantic car maker, we've seen in the last few days, guys, the Fiat 500 facelift. Now, I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, this car's been around since 2007.
Yep.
And
July 4, 2007.
Thank you. And it's very difficult to obviously refresh a car like that because it's such an iconic design. Mm-hmm. What are the changes to this car that we can see?
Bugger all. It's a bit different inside the cabin. But I mean, I think, you know, retro cars themselves do have a limited shelf life if you're going to stick with that retro design. We've seen the Mini evolve very, very slowly since BMW released the first one under its stewardship. And the Beetle has sort of come a little further. And we've seen some other retro cars fall flat after one generation. No one quite knows what the next 500 will look like, but you can't really, you're kind of constricted as a brand when you're making a car purely as an homage to something that comes from the past. So I don't really know what else they could have done beyond what it's done. Yeah.
Well, the word is that on July 4, 2017, the next generation car will be unveiled in Turin.
Given the first one was revealed, or the first of the modern ones was revealed on July 4, and then the update was revealed on July 4, it stands to reason they might stick with the July 4 thing.
Yeah.
That's a 10-year model life.
Yeah, but the car, I think, I did a comparo with it in Wheels car 2 months ago, where it still won its class against the excellent Suzuki Solero and the Nissan Micra, which did okay in it as well. And what surprised me,
standing up.
Yeah, what surprised me and my colleagues that drove it is just how thoroughly engineered that car is in, you know, in terms of chassis development and ride refinement and steering feel in a way that the others can't really match. And it's still the best-selling car in that sub-B segment in Australia.
That's true.
Despite the fact that it's got ludicrous pricing at the moment.
Unfortunately, it's no longer the best-selling
car. Isn't it?
No, the Mitsubishi Mirage flogs it and everything else in the segment.
I think you're wrong, Mike. No, I think Mike's
wrong. Hang on, are we talking about combined Mirage sales?
The Mirage hatch flogs everything else in the micro segment, unfortunately. Yeah.
I think you're wrong.
Look, we might leave this to the ad breaks, guys. Yes. But we do have a lot more. We are going to talk about sales pretty much next, actually. We've had all of the sales data released in the last week or so, and we're up to the midway point through the year, so we're going to go through all of that fun stuff next. That's true. We urge you to become a member of Joy 94.9. We would love to take your money. Basically, we always need cash injections to keep us going. So feel free to do that. That is fabulous. Also, if you just want to say hello, or if you want to ask us a question or something, we would love to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949 is the text line, or email on air at joy.org.au. Now, just before the break, we were having a small argument about sales.
I can't believe Byron. Challenge me on sales figures. I'm such a nerd for sales figures.
You are a nerd, it's true.
Yes, the Mirage dominates the segment. Now, it's not the best car in the segment, but it is the cheapest.
But it is.
You can get one for 10 grand if you haggle hard enough.
I do stand corrected, but no one sane would buy a Mirage over a...
You know what? I didn't hate the Mirage sedan. I should, but I didn't. I know, it's my shame. It's one of my secret shames. Okay, we'll move right along. Yeah. Now, but speaking of sales, so in the last couple of weeks, as I said before, we're up to the midway point through 2015. I think we're a little bit ahead this year. As I choke on my words, what are we looking at this year, Mike? What's the market doing?
We are on track for the biggest market, the biggest sales year of all time. Mm. You know, so we're up a few percent this year on last year. And last year wasn't the record. Last year was the second record. 2013 was the record. So anyway, we're on track to beat that. And, you know, for all this talk of the economy slowing down a little bit and some perhaps, you know, things are not quite booming along as well as they were for a while, car makers are throwing out ludicrously good deals at the moment, and people are obviously taking them up on it. I did a story this week talking about the cars that had grown the most in sales in the first half of the year. Now, I don't mean in percentage terms, because if a car sold 2 cars last year and sold 10 this year, that's 500%. It's kind of meaningless because it's such a small number. But of the mainstream volume-selling cars, what car do you think has increased its sales the most this year over last?
Mirage.
Can you give me a clue? Is it an SUV?
It is an SUV. And not surprising, because SUVs are dominating sales like never before.
I'm going to say a Nissan X-Trail.
Close. Ooh. Very close. That is, in fact, number 3 on the list.
Ooh.
So you're close. But it's not number 1.
No.
Number 1 is the Subaru Outback.
Ah, yes.
A car that has been around forever, and most of you out there probably are familiar with in some form, one of the earliest examples of the crossover SUV, not quite a jacked up hardcore all-wheel drive, or four-wheel drive, I should say, something in between a passenger car and a four-wheel drive. At the start of the year, they launched a new one, and they cut the prices in a huge way. There was the free trade agreement that helped them do that, but Subaru also realized it was just plain too expensive before for other reasons.
Yeah.
The new one's much better than the old one, and it's much more affordable, and it's selling in droves.
Hot cakes.
Its sales are up 300% this year, which is frankly ridiculous. And when you consider it was already popular last year, you can see just how damn popular it is this year. Some of the other cars that are up the most are the Honda Jazz, again, a new one launched recently with lower prices. The X-Trail, as you mentioned. The Mercedes-Benz C-Class, which we've talked about the C-Class before, how ridiculously well that thing's selling. It's selling more than the Mazda 6. It's only behind the Camry of all the midsizes. That thing is up more than 100%. The Toyota Kluger. Interesting one. That being said, it was really down last year, so it was quite easy to come back from that. The Kia Cerato, the Mitsubishi Triton, the Mitsubishi ASX, the Volkswagen Polo, and coming in 10th as the 10th fastest growing car was the Suzuki Swift, the humble Swift.
Little Swift, which has been around for a while. Just picking up on the Cerato, I noticed those figures as well, and there's it's now outselling the Pulsar, the Mitsubishi Lancer, a bunch of mainstream models that have been around forever. I'm personally quite happy that vehicle has finally picked up
traction. Yep. And Kia has for a long time now been retailing. And look, let's ignore list prices. We all have to write in our stories that a car goes for $20,990 plus on roads, because that's the only standard measurement. But if you look at what people actually pay for cars, nobody pays that. Kia's been doing $99.90 with a free auto drive away on a Cerato for months and months and months, which is insanely good value. You could barely get a Polo with an automatic for that.
And is that drive away? So, and this is the other thing that's inflating sales in the last couple of months, at least, is that the government's decision to do that. What is it? The tax breaks for vehicles under $20,000. That's all included.
You'd think that would, but then light van sales and ute sales and all those commercial sales haven't really changed since that policy came in. They're up in the past few months, but they're up in the few months before that too. So it's a bit unclear how much it's actually affecting things. But what we are seeing is, just a handful of cars that are going for bargain basement prices. And the Cerato is a perfect example.
And I think the Hyundai i30 we were talking about before, just the regular i30, it was the top-selling car by...
Beat the Corolla.
Some margin.
Yeah, it's never been number one before. All month, they were doing crazy sharp deals. Funnily enough, they were doing the same deal that their sister brand Kia has been doing for months, but nobody really knows Kia quite as well as Hyundai, so that would explain it. But, you know, it really does show that we talk about one kind of price, but people ain't actually paying that. And if you are paying that, you shouldn't be paying that. You should be haggling a little harder.
Yeah, haggle the... I nearly said a swear word.
Yeah.
Haggle the hell out of those dealers. Let's have a bit of a quick predictions, just to cap off the sales chat, boys. What do we think is going to be the top-selling car in this country by the end of 2015?
Fiat 500, the facelift.
It
didn't change that much, but, you know,
people are going to go crazy.
It's going to go crazy. I don't know.
The Corolla.
Yeah.
Like, not even a shadow of a doubt. Yep. There's no doubt about it. You know, people like Corollas. They don't break.
They do.
I don't know. I think Mazda might, you know, get, you know, with the 3 and they sharpen that thing up in terms of responsive advertising, sharper prices, that sort of thing.
But it depends the way you look at it, because if you're talking about the car bought by the most actual people for their own car, the Mazda 3 is number one.
Yeah.
But the Corolla, we're including things like fleet sales and rental companies and all these things, and that's where the Corolla's number one. But if you mean the car that actual people buy for themselves to drive every day, then totally the Mazda.
I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing things like HRVs and CX-3s, those little
top 10
compact SUVs, as their supply issues loosen up a bit. I think they'll start entering the top 10. Yeah, and they're great alternatives to small cars, as you know, as we all know.
Speaking of small cars, ladies and gentlemen, now, just yesterday, Ford Australia revealed the pricing for their midlife facelift for their Focus.
Long awaited. It's only a year and a half late, guys. It's nothing.
They've got a bit of a habit of that, old Ford Australia, don't they?
Ford Australia is going through a strange period in its existence of dramatically overpricing a lot of its cars. They announced pricing on the Everest recently, and it absurdly high, frankly, for the top spec version.
The range has gone up, I believe.
The range has gone up. Everybody else is cutting their prices, and Ford is going in the other direction. And their sales are doing ditto. They're going down double digits, where everybody else is going up. It's kind of emblematic of what that brand is doing. Ford says that it is, and this is a fair excuse, they're saying, no, we're getting rid of all our fleet sales. We just want to focus on private buyers. That's why our sales are dropping. That's okay. But they announced the pricing at a Focus during the week, and it's now $23,500 at base level. And you get a lot of car for that. There's only one engine now, and it's a very powerful engine. It's the most powerful engine in its class at the lower levels. Every version has sat-nav. Every version has digital radio, reversing camera. Really, really well-equipped, really good engine. Going to be a really good car, but without that $99.90 entry level car that everybody else has, are they going to get the cut through that they need? And I think the time of Ford being a proper volume brand seems to be coming to a close. I mean, it is falling down the charts. Within a year or two, Volkswagen will pass Ford.
Yeah, easily. It's interesting though, Byron. Do you think that people buy those base spec models?
Well, there is a rhyme to this reasoning of what Ford is doing, because there is more money to be made in the private sector. And also, the private sector really does have longer legs in terms of, you know, building brand awareness and brand loyalty. And that's something that Mazda used to do in the people with longer memories will know that it's what Mazda did in the 70s and 80s. So I think there's a long game that's been played here. And I think, frankly, they're doing the right thing, because Ford realises that they're not going to compete with 19990 driveaway Kia Cerados, and frankly a Focus is a better car than a Cerato, and it is a better car also than a Corolla at that price. So as these cars evolve, I think what Ford is doing is that they're going after maybe building the brand to be closer to Volkswagen. So they'll never achieve the volumes that they had in the 80s when they were number one, but I think as a long-term strategy, there is this does make sense. And if people buy cars when people buy cars privately, they do cross shop against cars like Golfs and Mazda 3s. And Mazda makes the volume of its volume, you could say, with mid to up spec models. So when you consider that the Focus costs $1,100 more than the previous base model, but does get, as Mike said, a more powerful engine and reverse cameras and rear sensors and sat nav as standard, then There is like a case to be made there.
It's a good point, because Mazda is an example to everybody. And Mazda, you're right, you're dead right about Mazda in the 80s. Australia's the only place in the world where Mazda is their number two brand. Mazda is massively successful here compared to everywhere else that it sells its cars. And it's because Mazda is considered almost a premium brand in Australia, which nowhere else considers Mazda that, really. So yeah, there is a lot to be said for that. And maybe in 10 years' time, I'll be wrong and Ford will be geniuses.
But and that's the thing, though. It is a long game. It's going to take a really long time.
And if that's what Ford's doing, credit to them, because nobody plays long games anymore.
No.
So if that is what's happening, then all credit goes to
them. And they've got to shake off that. I grew up in country Victoria, and you either had a Ford or a Holden. That was it. There was no other alternative. That's what you would buy. And people of kind of my generation now, we have so many options. There's that thing of like, oh, I really don't want a Ford. I'm sure they're good cars, but I don't want a Ford, or I don't want a Holden, again, you know, for that kind of reason. So they're fighting against that, and that's a very big and very difficult challenge ahead of them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had 15 years of Ford discounting the living bejesus out of their cars, and look where it's got them. They've just been having their market share eroded on a monthly basis since in the 17 years I've been doing this business, so with a couple of exceptions. So I think that someone who does know what they're doing is taking control. Ford is an American company. They're going gangbusters in the States. They've got a lot of work to do in Europe, and they're growing in Asia and particularly in China. So I think that there's also a broader global picture going on here. But you're right, it is disappointing if you were expecting a $20,000 Focus. That no longer exists. But I do hear that the next generation Fiesta, which is not far away, has grown a little bit and may fit into that kind of lower-end Focus role.
Interesting.
And I think there's also movement in the EcoSport space with Ford, you know, that compact SUV that no one ever sees.
I was going to say,
terrible car.
It's Ford's worst car.
Because at the moment it's a bowel movement, so they're going to really see if they
it
can
really is a
there.
Rubbish car.
Oh, absolutely atrociously bad. Well, let's reconvene this time next year and look at Focus sales and see what impact it's having. Okay, guys, we'll see you then. Bye. No, I'm just kidding. Enjoy 94.9, keeping warm, keeping out of the chilly, chilly Melbourne air. Hope you are warm and cozy wherever the hell you are. We've got more coming up today, of course. We're going to be talking about the Skoda Fabia. But right now, guys, I wanted to bring up an article I saw that was a little bit controversial and a little bit outrageous. It's from the UK, and it suggests that women are charged £45. I don't know what that is in Australian dollars.
About 90 bucks.
Really. 90 bucks. Yeah. Women are charged £45 more than men for car repairs in the UK on average.
Really?
Outrageous.
It's astonishing in this day and age.
It is, isn't it? Do you guys, have we heard of this happening? Do you have female friends that kind of find it
not
a bit
in the car repair industry, but I was a car salesman for some time. Please don't hate me too much. I was just paying the bills. And there was still in corners of that industry, and it was dying, but there were still corners of that industry where it was the, we can probably shark the woman more than the guy. I freely admit I would never do that, but there was still that element there. And I think that old school mentality still applies perhaps across other areas of the car industry where some people might think, hey, this person, because she is a woman, may be more prone to buying my exaggerated quote. And if that's happening, it's an outrage.
Yeah. It's pretty shocking, isn't it?
Yep. And particularly in this day and age of internets and easy research and the proliferation websites that do arm people with the information they need. Yeah. It still happens, and I think just don't stand for it. I mean, but how do you not stand for it, Tim and Mike?
If you're not an expert in an area,
yeah.
I mean, we take for granted knowing things about the car industry, but there's so many areas where I have no expertise whatsoever, and it would be quite easy to gouge me. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to things like smash repairs, just understandably don't, they're not equipped with the knowledge. I think it's really important, and it really raises a good point, which is whenever you're doing anything in this field, it doesn't hurt to get multiple quotes on anything. You know, and furthermore, if your insurance company, sometimes your insurance company might give you the leverage to do that. And if it insists on you not doing that, maybe it's not so great.
But it goes beyond just smash repairs. It's just mechanical repairs and new tyres. We're talking earlier about, checking your tyres. When you go into a tyre shop, for instance, don't pay the price that they advertise. Say, no, I want a discount. And really, aim for 20% off.
Really?
Seriously? Yep.
Go for gold.
Just aim for it. And if it's not available, then just go somewhere else if you want to save money. And I think people respect that sort of kind of consumer empowerment.
See, I don't know. I again hark back to my days selling cars and
people. You can take the car salesman.
But people would come in and expect, like some people would say, you can easily get a 10, 20% discount. You just can't. We would lose money at that. Our margins were less than 10%. So if you ask for a 10% discount on a new car, half the time that dealership will lose money doing that. And unfortunately, companies ain't around to lose money. No. So I think in some areas, maybe you can ask for a big discount, but be aware that it's not like everyone is gouging out there. I would try and play devil's advocate there and say, in this case, if women are being charged more in the UK, that's an outrage.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean everywhere is gouging.
But let's put it out to the listeners. Has anyone experienced that? Have you gone to a garage and found that you maybe were paying a little bit more, or that maybe somebody was trying to take advantage of you because they thought that you didn't know what was happening?
Shall we name and shame?
Well, exactly. 0427JOY 949 or email on air at joy.org.au. Always very, very happy to hear from you. Boys, moving right along to the Czech Republic. I've never been, but I'm sure it's lovely. Is it lovely?
The Czech people are brilliant people.
There's some very attractive Czech people.
Yes,
and there's
there
a lot
that.
Of films on the internet with some Czech men, but that's another.
Oh, yes. What type?
I guess art house. Sorry.
Oh dear. Tim's left the building. He's to have a cold shower, so I'll be taking over next.
That's true.
25 minutes.
No, I did. I had the chance to drive the little Skoda Fabia this week, which is, so it's a little light car based on the Volkswagen Polo, starting from about 15,990 plus on roads for the base 66 TSI. You guys have driven this car overseas, and I'm sure we've spoken about it before. I just love this car, and not because we're on Joy 94.9 and it's called a Fabia. That is not the only reason.
It's a name that lends itself to so many puns.
Doesn't it, though? Oh, and it's, you kind of expect the headlines to be something to do with fabulous and all that kind of stuff. But I tried to avoid that.
Or check it out.
Oh, yeah.
That's the old tired one.
Of course.
But look, it's a car that never has been that widely known in Australia. And, you know, Skoda itself is a brand that isn't very widely known, but it's just a, well, everywhere else in the world, it's a cheaper Volkswagen that is a Volkswagen, except for the badge and the design. In Australia, it's not really cheaper, but it sells on being a bit offbeat, a bit quirky, full-size spare wheel, lots of space in it, very practical, all that kind of stuff is where Skoda aims. But the Fabia, Byron and I have both driven it overseas, you've driven it on local roads, and I think all of us are pretty big raps for it.
It's just a great little car, and even with the Boggo, the entry-level engine, which is that 66-kilowatt little four-cylinder turbo, and I drive that with a manual, and it's just a really fun little car to drive. It's not going to set your pants on fire, but for a little city car, the flexibility you get with it as well, the cabin space and the cargo space, and they're quirky little things that they do in the back, in the cargo area, with all of the netting and these strange little plastic moldings that you can put places. And
I love those Velcro things. They're great.
Everything about
it. And there's, of course, the wagon version, which is such a unique car because there is no other light wagon available in Australia. And the old Fabia wagon, you know, was very spacious, but it looked horrendous. The new one is quite resolved. Yeah. And it's a really interesting, nice alternative to the cars like the HRV that we were talking about before. It doesn't have that high ride height that people want, but it's cheap. It's just over 20 grand and it has more cargo space than a Honda CR-V, which is a medium SUV.
And it uses a fraction of the fuel of some of the of its rivals. Yeah. And that, to me, makes it, you know, a very excellent alternative to these cars, particularly if you are city bound or in, you know, in the burbs. And it looks, as you said, looks great. And the old one was looked like a hat full of something.
Monkey's bottoms. Yeah, it was very top-heavy and weird-looking. And it's funny because I agree. I think the styling of both the hatch and the wagon this time around, it just they've taken the elements to make it look like a Fabia, but it just looks a bit more, and this is going to sound terrible, a bit more normal now. You don't stand out as much. You do a little bit, but it's kind of a bit, oh, yeah, that's a light hatch. Quite a good-looking light hatch,
well,
I think. So
I spoke with Skoda's chief designer not long ago, and Volkswagen says to them very clearly, you have to focus on being practical, and you know, you can't be too aggressive with your styling because that's its thing, that's what it has to be. But the brand is now understanding that it doesn't mean its cars have to be ugly, they can just be boxy and interesting, but not misproportioned,
not
like
minging
some of the cars have been in the past. But it's actually inside the car the Fabia is most interesting to me, because Volkswagen as a group is at the vanguard of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto's rollout in Australia. Volkswagen announced last week that it was going to put that in all of its cars, and Skoda with the Fabia has also done that, I believe.
And they have.
And this is you know, this is so that your screen in your car mirrors your phone, be it an Android or an Apple phone. Yep. And so you know, it makes it a whole lot easier to operate things like your Bluetooth and your music and your songs and whatever it is you want to do. Your screen just becomes your phone. And it's not about looking at your phone as you drive, because it's in front of
it's
you,
it's screen.
Safe, it's all legal, it's all fine. And it's a big step up.
I think that familiarity is that was a big thing for me. I had a play with the Apple CarPlay, and the fact that it is exactly like your phone, I just think there's less distraction, there's less time to learn a new system. It's just
and it's always up
to
date, because you get a new phone and your car's infotainment system becomes your new phone. It's not like if you have a 5-year-old Golf now, its infotainment system is looking a bit tired because it's 5 years old. So that, you know, down the line it will be a rewarding thing to have.
Much smarter idea, isn't it?
Now, duty free.
Yes.
Maureen Glory has a question for you.
Tell me.
Regarding the Fabia and its relationship with the Spaceback. What did you learn this week about the Spaceback? Is that still going to be around?
The Spaceback? In the Fabia?
The Rapid, you mean?
The Rapid Spaceback,
It's
confusing because, you know, as a punter who goes into a Skoda dealer, you've got the new and frankly excellent Fabia wagon, and then you see something called a Rapid Spaceback, which to me sounds I don't know what the
Just call it a darn hatch, people, and that's what it is, isn't it? It's like a kind of a bigger hatch. It's like Audi's version of what do they call the Sportback?
Yeah,
and that's like a hatch wagon. It's a hatch. Yeah, there's nothing wagon.
So that,
about
that's
it.
Also gotten a couple of changes, hasn't it? Or is that continuing?
The Rapid has. Oh, they've introduced a new variant, which is the Monte Carlo, which is just it's essentially just a bit of a styling package, and it's got some black bits everywhere. It actually looks really cool.
The whole range got an update late last week, so you can option up CarPlay and Android Auto on Yeti and all those goods now. So they're following the Volkswagen course only, I believe, a lot of it's optional.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, kudos to those two brands. And, you know, Audi, the supposed, you know, premium Volkswagen Group brand, hasn't made any such announcement, which is interesting to me. You'd think they would be the leaders, and, you know, I won't make too many
comments.
But
surely it's imminent, isn't it?
You would think so. Yeah. You would certainly hope so.
I don't think they've made any announcements. The other thing I'll say about the Fabia, it's got autonomous emergency braking standard across the entire range.
Five-star ANCAP rating, and against ANCAP's toughest 2015 regime as well. So that's a sensational effort.
It's, honestly, that car just gets a big tick. I love the Polo. I think the Polo's brilliant. Obviously, these two cars share a lot, including the engines.
There is one notable downside, though,
oh,
because a 66 engine, as you mentioned, is not available anywhere in the world with an automatic.
Yes.
So if you want the automatic, which is what most buyers will want, you have to buy the bigger 81 TSI engine.
That's a very good
point.
And
that means not only do you have to pay the extra $2,500 for the auto, you have to pay an extra little bit because it's a different engine as well.
Yeah.
So the cheapest auto one you can get, I believe, is a shade over $20,000.
Yeah, just
and that is a massive jump from a pretty attractive 15,990 entry car to one that's more than $20,000.
Yeah.
That is where it becomes a bit tricky, because Skoda is supposed to be a bargain basement brand, and that is not that a is bargain not basement.
So, folks, learn to drive a manual. That's what
I say. Well, it's funny you say that, because the manual is so fabulous that I didn't mean to say fabulous then, I really didn't. But I would encourage people to do that, because I found it much better than the 81 TSI, which is the auto. And they did what they often do when you go to a launch, and they put a bunch of different packages with the car. And this one had a sports premium pack, which stiffens the suspension and does a bunch of stuff. And it was just like, guys, we don't need that on a Fabia. Mm. And it actually didn't help the ride at all. But anyway, but no, Mike's quite right. That's a very, very good point. It does get a bit expensive when you start optioning it up as well. Yeah. So, but as far as a little entry-level car, you can't do much better.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Now, we've got a lot more coming up just around the corner. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Tim, Mike and Byron here with you, warming you up on this chilly, chilly Saturday afternoon. We hope you are having a fabulous afternoon as we are. And we have had a text in to the wonderful text line asking us some questions about cars, and we sometimes can answer these questions, can't we, boys?
Oh, we certainly can.
On this occasion, we definitely can.
Awesome.
From Caroline and Trish, we have ordered a new VW Golf R wagon, allegedly due to be released in October. If it is October, do you know when VW will be likely to announce the launch? Because we think it's the perfect vehicle to take the doggies, and it will still be heaps of fun. Well, Byron and I have actually both driven this car.
So
that's convenient.
Yep.
We were both on for our respective publications on a trip to Europe recently, and had a chance to give this car a bit of a fang around the Ascari Raceway. The Golf R, of course, is Volkswagen's hottest hatch, and the Golf R wagon name... The name's kind of obvious what it is. It's a wagon version of that. And it is indeed due in October. It will be sold in small numbers, and it will be maybe $2,000 or $3,000 more than the Golf R hatch, which will be about $60,000, somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah, and pretty loaded for that amount of money as well. Like
chock-a-block, all-wheel drive, 206 kilowatt, all the good performance stuff. And look, it's a brilliant car. It's kind of a bit of a unique car in that market, because all the really hot wagons that are out there from Germany are all ludicrously expensive. Things like the Audi RS4 and the C63 AMG wagon. So this is kind of a cut price version of one of those, and a good alternative to an SUV with a very, very, very performance based edge. So fantastic car. I had a great time driving it. For what you get practicality wise and performance wise, it's kind of one of a kind.
Mm. Although I just want to say that if the girls want to hang on, they should maybe wait for the LeVorg. The Subaru LeVorg, which will be Subaru's return to form. Turbo, four-wheel drive, compact mid-ish sized wagon that will be here probably around the second or third quarter of next year.
About June next year. So this is a car that's been around for a while, and we've been saying, where the hell is it in Australia? Finally announced during the week that it's coming.
And the LeVorg has been a smash hit in Japan. Like, they just can't make enough. The demand for that car has been tremendous. And from all accounts, and by all accounts, it really is a return to form.
And most importantly, it's grovel backwards.
Yes.
Mm. Oh, I did look up the other day why it's called Lavorg, and there is some ridiculous three-stage explanation, and I should have looked it up before I started talking. But it is ridiculous. It is another example of ridiculousness.
It's just an Impreza hatch, basically, in a lot of ways. Not quite. It's more advanced than that, but it is a replacement for the old WRX hatchback that we know and many of us love.
But quite a bit larger, and it's within a whisker of the fourth-generation Liberty GT wagon that we got from 2003 to 2009. Pretty one.
And the Lavorg is a looker,
and
I think.
One other option in that segment, and just you can like stay within the VW group, is the, we just talked about Skoda. Will Skoda do the Octavia RS wagon, which is about 40 grand, so two-thirds the price of the Golf R wagon. Bigger car, about the same amount of room in the back.
No all-wheel drive.
Quirky, offbeat sort of nature, as Byron says, no all-wheel drive, but plenty of grunt.
Now, on that Octavia is related to the Golf. Am I right?
MQB.
There we go. So,
I love what you're doing.
Ladies and gentlemen, very briefly, we're going to talk about this very interesting phenomenon in modern day automotive, and that is the platform sharing, where cars essentially are built from the same kind of shell or whatever and sold as different cars, different brands, all that kind of thing. Do you think the general buying public are aware of how much this happens? Because we know it happens quite a lot. There's a lot of different automotive groups. Do people know, and do they care?
Well, I think the first mistake people make is thinking that cars are based on platforms, and they're not quite, it's not quite that simple. So like with Volkswagen, for instance, the MQB matrix, which is what they call their shared component bin, it's not as if the Octavia's hard points are the same as a Golf's. There are differences. Yeah. But, you know, fundamentally, there is a lot of shared elements between those cars, and then an Audi, a step up, an Audi A3 and a Golf are very, very, very similar underneath. People are more familiar, I think, with the fact that a Lexus and a Toyota are very, very closely related. A Lexus hybrid system is a Toyota Camry hybrid system. They're very, very similar to each other. And it happens across a number of different brands. And we're seeing this happening more and more and more moving forward. Fiat will do a version of the Mazda MX-5 quite soon, and it's been not very shy about that. But I'm not quite sure how ubiquitous the knowledge of the fact that this is going on is. And I'm not sure whether people would be quite as enthused about buying a more expensive premium car that's based on a cheaper car if they actually knew just how similar they really were.
And sometimes it benefits the car maker to one car maker to use another one's car maker. And the most obvious example of that is Skoda, that, you know, you get some really good Volkswagen quality cars in Europe for a lot less. In Australia, of course, that isn't always the case. But sometimes it goes the other way as well. Like, you know, there are car companies that I think their brands don't deserve the cheaper brands platform. For me, an example of that would be the Lexus CT, for instance, which is essentially a Corolla and drag. And
It's not even a good looking car.
Yeah. No. So in that situation, you'd buy stump up more for an IS or buy the Corolla.
Well, what about the Peugeot 4008 and the Mitsubishi ASX?
Well, this is the thing. Same car. It's the same car. Less. And I had a friend recently inquire about wanting to buy one of those or an HRV. I was obviously steering said person to the HRV, but they were really keen on the 4008, and they were aware of the similarities between the ASX, but they didn't know. The dealer was a bit like they don't go into much detail.
But this is where brand equity is so important, and this is where branding comes in. People will, you know, Audi makes almost, you know, a huge chunk of the money for the Volkswagen group. Why? Because selling stuff based on cheaper cars for more, because the brand is what people buy into.
Yeah.
It's the same with the Peugeot. Peugeot can charge more for an ASX than Mitsubishi can because it's got a Peugeot badge on it. And a lot of it comes down just to that. But under the skin, cars ain't that different to each other increasingly, you know, to a larger degree perhaps than what people realise.
And I think, you know, if people really want to know, they can do their research. Just get on the interwebs, go to Google and search, and you will be able to find out what your car is related to very, very quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to shut it down.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's time to shut it down for another day. But we will be back next week, as we always will. If you love Fenderbender as much as we do, you should absolutely go to joy.org.au/Fenderbender and find all of our podcasts, which are slowly but surely being updated. And they are all hilarious fun. So do that. Mike Costello, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are. Byron Matthew Darkus, I nearly forgot your surname for just a small second.
Oh, well, there's always Maureen Glory to
Just have been here. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure to see you and your beautiful face, Tim.
Bless you. Now, do stick around. Technogazers next with Michael, Mark and the gang. This is Tim Nicholson signing off for Fender Bender for another day. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.